I have a confession to make about myself, and of course the season, and that is, I'm a foodie. And by a foodie, I mean that I subscribe to, last count, around 4 food magazines. They have all kinds of wonderful, creative recipes from all over the world. I read the food sections of the Los Angeles Times and online another couple of newspapers, the food and wine section of the San Francisco Chronicle. It's about all the San Francisco Chronicle offers these days anyway. I just love it, except at the holidays. Because at the holidays, all of these food sections seem to think that they have to come up with new and exciting ways to take new and bizarre and exotic twists on the old holiday favorites. So Thanksgiving, which used to be so simple, Thanksgiving was, you got a big choice to, are you going to do a hen or a tom? That's it. Put it in the oven, it's done, sage dressing, end of story. But now there's tandoori turkey breast, where the food editors have clearly been as confused as Columbus about what was India and what was the New World. There are the questions of, well, should we brine it or just pre-salt it? Shall we cook it in a 400-degree oven for an hour and then reduce to 3 1/4? I have friends who do a 1-hour turkey. And it's got to be at room temperature. How long it has to be in room temperature is a question I don't even want to contemplate. After 3 days at room temperature, it's already hinky enough as it being a 1-hour turkey. It's got to be under 13 pounds and has to have nothing in the cavity. People tell me it's delicious. I haven't tasted it because I'm a traditionalist. I believe in turkey, not either salmon or salmonella for Thanksgiving. But the survivors tell me it's really very good and creative and a new twist on things. Of course, the big deal right now in the last couple of seasons, besides turducken, has been deep-fried turkey. If you want to be closer to God, deep-fry your turkey. There are lots of people who, if they ever remembered learning about Archimedes and how he learned about specific gravity and displacement, forgot it and filled up the cauldron with boiling oil and forgot to compensate for the fact that a 12, 13, 14 pound turkey was going to go in there. And they remember to yell Eureka right after they stop screaming fire. All this creativity has a certain downside to it, because for me, call me an old-fashioned, brace yourself, conservative, but it's about turkey. That's what Thanksgiving is about for me. It's not about all the creativity. The same thing is true as we enter this holiday season of December, and it is really all about eating when it's not all about drinking. And Hanukkah to me is about latkes, sizzling, and I can smell it, and like a character in Marcel Proust, searching for past remembrances, I am transported back to my childhood home. I'm transported all the way to the Grand Concourse in New York in my grandmother's apartment house. Those traditional smells make us time travelers. And history has nothing to do with it. The fact that the Maccabees never had potato latkes for the simple reason that all the potatoes were here and all the Maccabees were there doesn't bother me at all, because it's about our memories and our childhood and what is real and true and experiential to us. The Sephardic Jews, not having had potatoes, the leitmotif in the Middle East today, yesterday, and 2,000 years ago was oil. And so oil is the theme of Hanukkah, and they have the equivalent of donuts. Don't serve me Krispy Kremes at Hanukkah. It may be historic, and it may be somebody else's tradition, but I need to smell the latkes. Don't get cute with it. I don't need to smell curried latkes. I love curry, but I don't need curried latkes. I need the sights and the smells of my childhood. The same is true at Christmas. I can smell the Christmas decorations and the Christmas trees. You have a little more latitude in terms of menu at Christmas. You really don't want to go for the ham at Hanukkah, but you can have ham or roast beef or turkey at Christmas. But for me, the smell is the smell of evergreen. The smell of the wreaths, of that green smell of life, which is why Christmas trees should probably be made out of trees and not plastic, because it's about the kind of ephemeral nature of life, its strength, but also its fragility. All of these are the traditional tastes and smells of the holidays. I don't need to get too cute and too creative. This was not always the case. When I was a much younger clergy person, and I looked over some of my old sermons on the holidays and holy days, I noticed that Thanksgiving was always an expose of the closed-up hearts of the pilgrims and of the later Puritans, and it became a history lesson in pain and pessimism and in cynicism. Occasionally, I had alternated with the mythic story, but most of the time, I was trying to be historically accurate and absolutely interesting and fascinating. For Hanukkah, I would talk about not the spiritual issues of miracles and hope and light, but for Hanukkah, I would talk about how a band of natives were able to drive away the better armed and equipped foreign occupiers who thought, well, I don't do that one anymore because I heard from both the IRS and Homeland Security. I'm going to stay away from the historic themes of Hanukkah. Easter used to be somewhere between biology and botany. It was always about bunnies and flowers and seeds and springtime and life and the fecundity of everything. And God forbid I ever mention God. So, I was trying to be interesting and creative and to look at how can we turn this into something that's not the same old thing every year. How can we be creative? And I realized only this week that cooks, clergy, and columnists all have this same challenge, and I fall into all three categories, which is that calendar keeps turning around, and I and my ilk keep trying to get a new twist, a new take, something that is fascinatingly different. But it's not about difference and bottom. It's about memory. It's about those things that touch our hearts, that fill our hearts, that give us some sense of continuity with our own pasts, our own lives, our familial pasts, our tribal pasts, our national pasts. They are not so much about facts as they are about truths. They are not so much about history in the large and intellectual sense as it is about our personal histories, our personal experiences, and those things that have touched our hearts and opened our hearts, those things that are worthy to be passed on and continued as part of a sense of our continuity, that we were here and took place in something historic, that we actually do something about Thanksgiving or Hanukkah or Christmas or New Year's or Easter or Passover, that we're part of historic traditions that we celebrate with memory. And those memories are often triggered by tastes and by scents and by all of those sensual aspects of our lives that connect us together. It's one of the reasons why in all of these celebrations, why when we come to church or when they come to temple, there's always food before or after. There's always some kind of communion that people make. There are these rituals that we offer one another. Come in, have a cup of coffee. Well, it's not the coffee. It's the company. It's the warmth. It's the contact. And to some extent, it's the ritual. When you go into a Bedouin tent in the Sahara, you are offered very strong coffee. There's no cable, no TV, so you take the strong coffee that keeps you connected all night as you carry on your conversations. But you have very strong coffee flavored with sugar and cardamom, and you take no more and no less than 3 cups. Those are the rules. And everybody has rules of coming together to eat, to share. To share our journeys, whether they're going to be journey cakes or they're going to be Santa Lucia, or if you're from southern Sweden, Santa Lucia. You are looking for ways to share our own traditions because they're sharing pieces of our hearts, pieces of our past, and carrying them on into the future. These, to me, are the flavors and the scents of the holidays, the celebration of life and of sharing that help us to make them holy, that sanctify the holidays by the fact that we get together to cook, to feed, to taste, to share, and to trust one another. Because, essentially, when you are sharing food, there is a bond of trust that is established. Once you have broken bread together, there is a contract that is both explicit and implicit, that we have shared in a miracle of life. We have trusted one another not to poison one another, the one-hour turkey being a possible exception, and we are going to move on together celebrating this fragile miracle of life. Okay, those are the tastes and the colors. Let's talk about the colors. Because I don't want to get creative about colors either. I want to sing old songs. I want to taste old foods. I don't want to sing a 12-tone Little Christmas. I remember the great holidays of my own life. A Christmas in the Austrian Alps, where people were carrying torches, literally torches, into this tiny church and warming it, extinguishing the torches when they got to the church through the fields of snow, and then warming it with their singing, warming it body to body in the cold winter, making a joyful noise, a holy noise, and that is one of the most personally meaningful Christmases I've experienced. For my other holidays and holy days, they were about family, about today when I think about Thanksgiving and Hanukkah, I am conjuring up old faces and old voices with those old scents and those old flavors. Traditional. Thanksgiving is green to brown to gold. Those are its colors. I don't want to see the house decorated in anything else. Pumpkin pie should look like pumpkin pie. You know, it shouldn't look like key lime pie. I would love key lime pie, but it's just the pumpkin that I'm looking for at Thanksgiving. There are colors. The colors of Hanukkah are blue and white. And those are the traditional colors, and they're traditional white because they're traditional. And for me, when you light the menorah, the colors of the candles are always orange because that's what I grew up with. Now, I learned about this essential conservative nature of holidays from my friend Marcia, who about 25 years ago asked me to conduct a Seder for her family. And it was a large extended family, both Jewish and Gentile, and said, please come in and conduct a Seder that will include people and explain all the elements, but the most important thing, I want it to be really long and really boring, like the Seders of my childhood. And I got it. Yes, of course. That's what we're always trying to recreate. It's there are families that have recipes that if you weren't born into that family, you can't choke them down. But they're traditional. There are families you can't open your presents till you've had the oatmeal. There's got to be suffering before there's joy. We've got all of these rituals, and those rituals anchor us in time and extend us beyond the time of our own lives. The colors of Christmas, they're red for Santa and joy and happiness and life, and they're green for the evergreen Christmas tree. They're also green in our country for money, and they're red for debt. But let's not deal with that directly. Let's deal with the fact that all of that can lead to the other color of the season, which is blue, and the holiday blues. And I want to say a word in favor of the holiday blues. Our great religious celebrations all involve the rhythm of life and the rhythm of nature. They involve peril, the peril of that cold and hungry winter of the pilgrims, the peril of the occupation and near extinguishing of the flame of freedom for the Jewish people back in the time of the Maccabees, the peril of a baby born in a manger and the slaughter of the innocents that ensued after that moment. They're about peril and vulnerability, about the sun setting low, about the light seeming to go out, about coldness creeping around our hearts, and the fear that we all have of sinking deeper and deeper into fear, into isolation, into depression. And then there is a lifting of the veil as the sun begins to rise, as a candle glows in the dark, as the scent of food fills the home, as we come back to life and joy with song and with a sense of thanksgiving that we have triumphed over the dark season, over the frightening season. We have come through peril and fear and are triumphant, and we understand triumph not as the vanquishing of an enemy, not as the end of all fear, of all depression, of all sadness, but an affirmation of our ability to get through it today. Tomorrow's not promised to anyone, but today. And that's why we come together. Every religion in every land seasonally related to the sun going down, the world becoming cold, a time of scarcity as the earth seems to die. And what do? We light a candle against the darkness. We cook feasts against the cold and barren land. And we celebrate a party in the winter that affirms our belief that spring will come. And that's powerful magic. That's real magic that all of us carry around in our hearts, whether we can express it or not. And it's why, as we enter this month of December, that with all of the sense that I have of pedaling that life cycle as fast as I can through the joys and the despairs, there is a sense that what a great month it is. What a great month it is to come together, to make our joyful noises with one another against the cold and the dark, to have celebrations of food and family, even if the food is imperfect, even if the families are even more imperfect. It's our food. It's our family. And we get to make them, and we get to celebrate them, and we get to be with them, and we get to travel in time. Because that's what every holiday and holy day season is. It's about traveling in time. Backwards to our youth, and forward to where we and our heirs and legatees will travel. We create ritual, we renew ritual, we renew our lives and make a promise in the winter time that spring will come. Not for all, but it will come for humanity. And we are believers in life, believers in each other, and believers that winter can come in April and spring can come in December. And you don't have to be south of the equator for that. There are seasons of the sky and seasons of the heart. And we give thanks in the month of December and in November for those people who have blessed our lives, have touched our lives, those traditions that have enriched our lives and that are reminders of the blessings that we have experienced and the blessings that we have yet to share with one another.